Hello, AF Nation. Welcome to another edition of Arena Football Radio's AF Nation podcast. I am your host, Chris Hopkins. And once again, I am joined by Mikey Wansifer. He's got a fresh new haircut, buzz cut, if anybody's interested. And we also have Christy Rose, who is making her podcastual finale. We're making podcastual a word. I think I said that last week. And then I'll be also joined later by Liz Wentz. And then the two Connors, Connor Gomer and Connor Volpe. We're now at the end of our meal and going into dessert. We finished the regular season last week, week 20. Go over some of those results right now. The Keystone Collision, we had Pittsburgh knocking off Philly, 64-34. Tommy Greedy at one point threw four straight touchdown passes. Jacksonville and Los Angeles. Jacksonville came out of that game with a 53-36 victory. Orlando continuing their hot streak, knocked off Arizona 56-50. Cleveland secured the league record in regular season wins by defeating Tampa Bay 56-49. San Antonio beating New Orleans 38-35 in overtime. San Jose laid the beat down on the Iowa Barnstormers, 72-43. And then the last game of the week was Spokane knocking off Portland, 45-40. So I'm going to bring Christy and Mikey back to go over some of these storylines heading out of week 20. I guess just the first off, with Orlando knocking off Arizona, do you guys feel that going into these playoffs, Arizona's in trouble? Should the Rattler fans be worried at all? What are we looking at here?
Well, Arizona's going to win in the first round, probably no matter what, with the matchup they have with Portland. Okay. I think it is concerning. Just anytime you lose three or four, you have to be concerned, whether that's them taking their foot off the gas pedal or whether that's them legitimately losing. I think, really, when you look at it, they'll probably be fine in the first round. That will be a good game for them to kind of start being what they were in the beginning of the season when they started the season 14-0. But Orlando's a good team. I mean, that was a tough game. I thought Orlando had a great chance. But with Bernard Morris, that quarterback, they've...
Is he the hottest quarterback in the league right now?
I mean, he might be up there. I mean, I was a little puzzled when a couple weeks ago he didn't start over Jason Boltis. I'm not sure what was up with that. But when he started, he's been absolutely amazing. And he's really the best rusher, period, in the league. Just, he had the best yards per carry. He had the most yards rushing per game. He's just great with his feet, and he has a great arm as well. So that it wasn't that tough of a loss. I mean, just looking at how deep Orlando is and how good of a season they've had. But I think Arizona does need to start figuring something out sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with all of that. It's obviously very concerning going into this playoff run, but I think their first-round matchup will be kind of a nice way to ease back into their ways.
Yeah, just remembering what it's like to win, that type of...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know... Getting right back on that bike. And then the other thing coming out of week 20 was we had one playoff spot that was up for grabs. It came down to the Tampa Bay Storm in Philadelphia. Neither of them did each other any favors by both losing in week 20, but Billy was able to secure that spot. Cleveland had a chance to maybe, if they wanted to take their foot off the gas pedal in that game against Tampa Bay, let Tampa Bay come in. What are you guys' thoughts on this last playoff spot being decided last week?
Yeah, obviously very frustrating for Tampa Bay. They hung right in there the whole game until maybe the end of the third quarter when they kind of let it go. They got down by two touchdowns.
Yeah, they would get close, and they just couldn't...
They couldn't really just come
overcome,
back.
Yeah.
You know, they only lost by one score, which is very frustrating, and they knew that Philadelphia had lost, and
yeah.
They knew that it was right there. You know, this is a game that I think had the highest game attendance this year. A bunch of the Tampa Bay fans came out. So it's obviously a very frustrating situation for the Storm and their fans.
Yeah, and we had talked about it, you know, 4 weeks ago. We said Tampa Bay has the hardest stretch.
Absolutely.
They had to win
yeah.
one of those games. They lost all four.
For them to
happens, yeah.
Yeah, for them to still be in a position was kind of incredible. But, you know, I look forward to seeing Philadelphia play Cleveland again.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Cleveland definitely
for all the Tampa Bay fans out there bickering that Portland made the playoffs even though they only had five wins, when you lose four straight then the season, you don't deserve to make the playoffs.
Right.
Do you have anything to add?
I mean, I think you got to give Cleveland props just for not letting up at all in that game. I mean, they had everyone playing when there was some teams across the league that were resting some starters. I mean, in Spokane and Portland, you saw that neither starting quarterback was in that game.
True.
So they easily could have took Shane Austin out. And they didn't, and it was still a great game. As Christy said, it was a highly attended game. I think Tampa Bay was first in the league in attendance, so it was really good to see that they cared about the game, and it was really intense, and it came down to the last couple of minutes. But it's still, just like you said, I think it's fair that if Tampa Bay loses four in a row, I mean, obviously they had the better record than Portland, but just to lose four in a row, they completely blew it. They had every opportunity to make it. If they even won one of those games, they'd be in the playoffs right now, so they had their chance, and they just blew it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, as a coach, you want to control your own destiny. They controlled their own destiny, and that's what happened. Yeah, that's what happened. All right, thanks, guys. I'm going to send it over to Liz Wendt for our AFL Minutes.
The AFL has announced the members of this year's Arena Football Hall of Fame Operating Board of Directors, who will officially determine the 2014 Arena Football Hall of Fame class. The Operating Board of Directors consists of Darren Arbett, a three-time Arena Bowl champion coach, Ben Bennett, who led three different teams to five Arena Bowls in 10 seasons as an AFL quarterback, Mike Daly, a two-time Arena Bowl champion coach, Jim Foster, the inventor of Arena Football, Jay Gruden, a six-time Arena Bowl champion as both player and coach, Jerry Kurz, a founding partner of the Arena Football League and current AFL commissioner, and Bill Nero, a founding partner of the Arena Football League and a member of the Arena Football Hall of Fame. The formal Hall of Fame induction ceremony will be held during the 2015 Arena Football League season.
Thank you, Liz, for that AFL Minute. And we're going to go over these playoff matchups now that they're all set for the quarterfinals. I'm going to bring Mikey and Christy back to go over the American Conference to start. We've got the first game of the weekend is Cleveland and Philly. Philly's traveling to Believeland, as some people are calling it, to take on the East Division champs. This will be the third matchup between these teams. It's been well documented. The first two matchups were nail biters. You had the 54-52 win earlier in the season, and then you had the 1-point win in their last matchup, 69-68. This third time a charm for Philly. What are we looking at here? Or does Cleveland continue these miraculous victories over the soul?
Well, Philadelphia looked really bad last week, if you saw them at all against Pittsburgh. I mean, that was a game that mattered to them. They obviously didn't know that Tampa Bay was going to lose at the time, so that was just a really disappointing performance, and especially with how good they looked in the weeks leading up to the game. And that was still just to let Tommy Grady throw seven touchdowns, and really through three quarters, he didn't even play much of the fourth. Alvarell Nelson ended up taking over, and even he ended up throwing his first touchdown of the year, so they allowed eight passing touchdowns. So that secondary, I mean, they can't allow Shane Austin to have a game like they...
Their last game, Shane Austin put up 11 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Yeah,
that
can't
happen.
So based off last week's performance, I could see maybe something of that happening again this weekend if Philly isn't up for to perform better in the secondary.
I mean, I had a chance to talk with Rayshon Kaiser, defensive back, with the Stone. He was talking about just the importance of getting pressure on Austin. I think that was something that they were unable to do in their last game against them. And I think with a guy like Teddy Jennings, rookie defensive end, and Mary Jean, maybe he can have that impact that makes Austin uncomfortable. Chris, I'm going to turn over to you. What does Philly have to do to get over that hump?
Well, you kind of talked about pressure. You know, they have to kind of close. A lot of their problems in the last two games have come from, you know, not finishing the game at the end when they needed to. They let Cleveland have that one miraculous comeback with 50 seconds left. That shouldn't have happened in that scenario.
Can't let Shane Austin roll out of that pocket for that Hail Mary.
No, you really can't. You know, Cleveland's gotten pretty lucky. You know, they've had five or so games where they've won on the last play. So we'll see. It's going to be a fun matchup. Philadelphia is definitely coming in with a lot of vengeance and trying to get this game on the road. And they're a tough team to beat in the playoffs. But Cleveland's really rolling right now.
What does Philly quarterback Dan Rodabaugh have to do to go up against this stout Cleveland secondary? How does he, you know, kind of break that unbreakable wall?
Well, his task got a little easier this week with Mario Norman leaving, but you know, I think he's got to spread it out.
For those of you don't know, Mario Norman got signed by the NFL's Baltimore Ravens.
Right. So I think that lessens the pressure on their quarterback, but they're really just going to have to spread it out. Maybe rely more on the running game too. I'd like to see Ross get more touches. Even so. So I think that'll be key to getting around the Cleveland defense.
Okay. All right. And then the other American Conference matchup we have is the wild card Pittsburgh Power traveling to Orlando to take on the South Division champs, Orlando Predators. Bernard Morris, arguably the hottest quarterback right now in the league. What does that Pittsburgh defense, you know, namely the linebackers like James Bryant, what does that defense have to do to slow Morris down? Because he's been doing it through the year on the ground.
Well, yeah, I was actually talking to Arvel Nelson a little bit about Bernard Morris, because when Nelson plays quarterback, he's actually kind of like Bernard Morris. He's a big quarterback.
Sure.
He likes to run.
Yes.
And he said that actually helps him defensively, just sort of...
because he can kind of think like
how yeah,
Morris
exactly.
Thinks.
So he kind of knows when Morris is going to run, and just when he sees sort of when Morris breaks out of the pocket, he kind of knows, okay, this is when he's going to scramble, this is when I should rush in and try to tackle him. So I think having those instincts as a Jack linebacker and just having that quarterback experience... even Ron Jameson told me that he's kind of even knows the launch points of a lot of quarterbacks just from being a quarterback. So I think that's going to be the key, is kind of just knowing when Bernard Morris is going to scramble. And actually, the funny thing is, talking to Bernard Morris, he doesn't like scrambling. He doesn't like having to do it. But it's, of course, something he's just excels at, so it's something that he has to do. But I think that's the key, is just to watch when he does scramble and be able to put pressure on him.
Gift and a curse, the legs for Bernard Morris.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, this is Pittsburgh's first ever playoff game. Obviously, they had a lot of turnover in the offseason, but there are still some players that don't have that playoff experience. So how does Ron James get this organization ready for their first ever playoff game? Ron James has experience from his time in Utah.
Right. Well, you have to go in with a certain mindset. You know, I don't know if much is going to change for them. They've kind of, you know, they've, like Mikey said earlier, they've won 11 straight games. So they kind of just have to keep that up. Obviously, it's win or go home, and, you know, Orlando's going to be a tough team to play. Their last matchup was decided by a point. So I think it just depends on the mindset that you go in with, and it is a road game for them, but Pittsburgh has been great on the road this year.
Okay, and is there any way that the Orlando secondary can slow down Tommy Grady?
I don't know. We'll see. He's tough.
Yeah, last week there was a point where he had four consecutive passes that went for a touchdown, just to show how on fire he is right now. And if he didn't get taken out of that game, he probably could have got around 10 passing touchdowns. And I think he's, and I know we're not talking about this right now, but I think he's up there for MVP discussion as well. So I don't really know if anyone's going to slow him down. You're kind of going to have to just game plan around him, because he's going to put up some points.
All right, the Huntington Beach Redwood Tree, just chalking pills. All right, then moving on to the National Conference. We've got the first matchup. We got Portland going to Arizona. Obviously, Arizona back-to-back Arena Bowl champions. Portland, the expansion team. What's the likelihood Portland shocks the world?
This is a David versus Goliath kind of scenario.
Yeah.
But maybe with Arizona's recent losses, they're not as powerful as they once might have been earlier this season. Portland's always kind of played them pretty close. I think this is their fourth matchup this year. And Portland's had a young team, you know, a team full of rookies. I think 18 of the original people who started on the Portland team at the beginning of the season are still on the roster, which is kind of incredible for
expansion. You can sense their development, you know.
Yeah, they've grown so much, and Sock has done a great job getting them ready. You've definitely seen a lot of growth with them in the last week, playing their last games as closely as they have. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, maybe more so than people would expect.
Okay. Mikey, is there what does Portland have to do to slow down that Arizona passing attack?
Well, Portland, one advantage they've had all season is that they're up there enforcing turnovers. They have a great secondary. They have a pretty good defensive line, too, with Dante Pagemoss. If he could keep his head on straight, then he's really just a beast. But we've talked about a lot how they're maybe the most penalized team, really, in football history. Sometimes they get in fights, and that's... I think the main thing for them is really just to rest. Okay, it's a playoff game. No more fooling around. No more getting into fights. If they can really focus, I think that's where, I mean, they have the talent. They've faced Arizona four times, as Christy said, and that's a huge deal to face a team four times. You don't really see that in football, and that's with the kind of the new facing team three times in the regular season. It's a new thing, and I think each time Portland's looked better, so getting this fourth chance to beat Arizona, maybe they have a shot to do it.
Yeah, the last time they played the Rattlers, it was a couple weeks ago, end of July. They only lost by 10 points. I mean, compared to their first matchup against Arizona, which was in early May, they lost 61-32. So, you know, the improvement is definitely there. And then our last playoff matchup, we had Spokane traveling to the Pacific Division champs, San Jose. San Jose, you know, they've got Nathan Stanley, who's having a great year as a rookie. Spokane, they've been battling back since getting their reigning MVP quarterback, Eric Meyer, back. What do you guys see with this game? This could be one of the best matchups of the opening round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's actually the one I'm looking forward to the most, because I think they're pretty evenly matched. As far as talent goes, I think it could go either way. You look at both of the quarterback situations, and you have Nathan Stanley in his first playoff game as a rookie, and you always have the possibility of Russ Michna coming back, though I think it'll still be Stanley this week. I don't think Michna's ready. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. Meyer's been playing super well this last couple weeks.
Even if Michna was healthy, if you're daring our bet, would you play him?
I think you go Stanley.
You got to go with the sure thing right now,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Keep it while it's hot. Keep hitting the table. Mike, do you have anything to add? How does Spokane, what do they have to do to protect Eric Meyer? That's their most valued asset, obviously. He's the catalyst that gets that offense going. San Jose arguably is one of the best pass rushing attacks in the league with Jason Stewart. They got the return of Joe Sykes. They got Francis Maka. They love hitting quarterbacks. What does Spokane have to do to keep those guys off of Meyer?
Didn't Joe Sykes have three sacks last week? I mean,
something like that.
Yeah, he had
a
tremendous game. So, I mean,
and he's only been back a couple of games this season. I think he came back like 7 weeks ago or seven games. I mean, he hasn't been here for the full season, so his full effect hasn't been totally seen.
Yeah, that's what's kind of interesting with both these teams. It's more about how good are they at 100%. And I think that when the playoffs roll around, this is when maybe some nagging injuries that players have, or just some players who want to sit out, maybe will actually change their mind with the playoffs coming up. And just when you've seen Spokane with at 100% with Eric Meyer, they're up there with any team. And that's why it really is going to be the key protecting him, because especially with the injury he had that maybe could be something that he could re-break, let's say if he gets hit really hard by someone like Joe Sykes. I think that is going to be the key, is just containing Sykes and Stewart and really just protecting Eric Meyer.
If Sykes tees up on anybody, he could break him in half.
Yeah, exactly. So I that's why I think it's so important just to protect Meyer, but he's also another quarterback that's pretty quick with the feet. He had, I believe, 20 rushing touchdowns this year.
He set a franchise record and broke his own franchise record for rushing touchdowns.
And especially considering the amount of games he played, I think he played only 11 games. That's pretty impressive to do that, and especially considering he had an MVP year last year.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also worth noting San Jose added a couple veteran receivers last week, Ben Nelson, Chandon Harvey. Harvey, as some of you know, was on Arizona the past couple years, which is San Jose's bitter rival. I don't know if this is some type of tactical play, but Chandon Harvey, he didn't play last week against Iowa, but Ben Nelson did. Nelson, I think, last played in 2012. He was on a couple of great San Jose teams, so there's some veteran leaders coming up that San Jose signed right before the playoffs. Predictions. Let's get some numbers out there. Let's hear them. I want actual figures. Let's start with the Cleveland-Philly game. Shane Austin's first playoff game. You see him knocking off the veteran-laden Philly soul. Let's get some numbers out there.
I think Cleveland's going to win this game. As far as the score, it's hard to say whether it's going to be a close game or Cleveland's going to win by a lot, in my opinion. I think it's going to be one of the two.
I think if you were a betting woman, you would have to say that it's going to be
a close game.
Close game.
Yeah, I'm going to go with maybe 64-62.
That's fair. Mikey, do you have a prediction for this game?
I just think Cleveland's going to win this game pretty easily. Just with seeing Philly's performance last week, I'm just not buying them being able to get it all together. And even though it is a veteran,
are we clinging to the past a little too much?
Yeah,
Philly?
I think that's what it is. I mean, you got to look at Cleveland with the best record in AFL history in the regular season, then to lose in the first round in front of such a great crowd. They were third in attendance this year. I just don't see it happening.
That'd be a shocker. That would be. All right, now And predictions for the Pittsburgh-Orlando games. Orlando keep this hot streak going, or does Pittsburgh... I mean, they're both on great hot streaks right now. Pittsburgh's obviously won 11 straight. What do we see as a prediction for this game?
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh's going to move past Orlando, and it is a little bit weird that because Orlando won the division, even with the worst record, they're still going to be home for this matchup, which certainly gives them an advantage. But I'm still going to go with Pittsburgh. They won 12 in a row.
Yeah, right.
To end the season. So I think they're too hot right now, and they have had a lot of rough games in that stretch, some close games. But I still think Pittsburgh has enough to get past Orlando, and their defense could answer the bell in terms of stopping Bernard Morris.
All right, Christy, I know you're a huge Bernard Morris guy.
Yeah.
Huge Bernard Morris fan. Who do you like here?
Yeah, I love Bernard Morris, but I'm still going to have to go with Pittsburgh, I think. I think right now they're just rolling too much. Their last game against the Soul was a big win for them.
This should be in a high-scoring game. Is it going to be a shootout, or what do we see? A lot of turnovers? What's the thought here?
I'd probably go with maybe more high-scoring. I think both quarterbacks are very capable of putting points up on the board, so... I don't know if it'll necessarily be a shootout, but I expect high scores from both teams.
Okay.
Maybe like a 2-score differential.
For the next prediction going to the National Conference, I hate to say it, I think Arizona seems like the foregone conclusion they're going to roll over Portland. I was holding hope that maybe Portland could shock the world. I think they've lost some key pieces down the stretch here. What do we see there? Do you guys see Arizona faltering at all?
Not at home. Not right now.
And I think you might see the Arizona of old, or so to speak, or beginning of this season. I think they'll really dominate and just sort of look in, more in postseason form and look more like that team that was fortunate to 0 and had the longest win streak in AFL history. I think you're going to see that team come alive again this weekend.
All right. Kevin Guy is going to definitely be yelling at his players. maybe it'll be a nicer halftime speech this week. And then we got the last game of the first round quarterfinals. It's Spokane at San Jose. This one could go either way. What are we seeing here in terms of prediction?
I'm gonna go with Spokane. Reigning MVP Eric Meyer.
Upset here. You see the wild card upset in the division already.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Okay. Score.
Let's go with maybe 58-51.
Okay.
Yeah. I hate to go with all the favorites, but I see San Jose making it through here. I like what Spokane's done as of late, and having Eric Meyer backs obviously everything to them, but San Jose's a really tough team, especially playing them on the road. Nathan Stanley, I think as long as he stays calm and just doesn't look like a rookie, which he did a couple weeks ago against Philadelphia, but I think as long as he's just doesn't turn the ball over and just lets that defense dominate, I think San Jose's going to move past Spokane.
I think it's worth also noting San Jose and Spokane played each other 3 times this season, and Spokane's only won against San Jose. That was the only game Eric Meyer started.
Mm-hmm.
He did play in the third game, but he was still coming back. They didn't start him, so he was still recovering there.
Right.
It'll be fun to finally see a healthy Eric Meyer go up against that San Jose defense, which is, like we noted before, deadly.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun game.
And I'm going to bring Liz Wentz and then the two Connors back. We're going to discuss who we think is going to win Coach of the Year this year. A lot of great candidates, a lot of new candidates. So I think it's an open race for Coach of the Year. So talking about the Coach of the Year possible candidates, I mean, in a lot of people's minds, it seems like it's a two-man race against two East Division opponents, Ron James of Pittsburgh and Coach Stevie Tan of Cleveland. Is that the consensus in the room? It's coming down to Tan and James?
I think Matt Sauk from Portland certainly deserves some recognition. I mean, he took an expansion franchise to the playoffs. The first part of the year, they were not good. That was pretty clear. And by the end of it, they were nearly knocking off teams like Spokane and Arizona, and they won their games on the stretch to get into the playoffs. He managed to find a quarterback in Kyle Rowley who was kind of bouncing around and turned him into a pretty dang good player. And that defense actually turned out to be pretty good. They forced turnovers. They wreaked havoc in the secondary. I think if you ask Arizona, they would have much rather played the Kiss if they had happened to make the playoffs, because I think Portland's actually a pretty tough matchup at this point. So the fact that they went from basically zero to something and made the playoffs is quite an achievement considering that team didn't exist a year ago. So I think he deserves mentioning in that group. I don't think it can only be two guys.
What does it say about the 5 wins? Does that hurt Sauk at all?
It doesn't look great, but I mean, you'd rather be in the playoffs than not. I mean, you can't hit on him for the fact that the rest of the league like didn't play well. He made the playoffs. He won the games he needed to get there. And I mean, like I said, considering that there were literally the team didn't exist a year ago, the fact that he's in the playoffs despite whatever record he might have is an achievement in itself.
If you're going to give the Head Coach of the Year award to Matthew Sauk, I think you're absolutely out of your mind. the Portland Thunder have the most penalties in the AFL this year. And I know he has a young team. That 5 wins, that looks horrible on his resume for Coach of the Year. 17 wins for Stevie Tan is looking pretty good out there in Cleveland.
Does a guy like Ron James benefit from just inheriting a great team, though, because he wasn't there in the offseason?
Inheriting a great team, I mean, he did inherit the great team that Pittsburgh had, but also you got to look at most of those guys. They were on the Utah Blaze in 2013, and they went 7-12 that year. 6-12.
Who coached that team?
Ron James. So he's gone 15-2 this year, and he's completely turned that team around since their Week 1 loss to Cleveland, and I think that he's got a pretty good shot at winning it this year.
Well, I was just going to jump in about Coach Sock. I agree with both of you in some points. I agree that he is a great coach, and he has coached a team from a brand new franchise to a playoff team, but I don't think he's quite there yet to receive the Coach of the Year title. I think that the improvements that he's made to the team have definitely been outstanding, but I don't think it's enough to add up to the Coach of the Year title, but I am excited to see what he can do next year.
And I think as far as the 5 wins go and the discipline and all that, I think that if you talk to Tampa Bay, they'd much rather win 5 games and make the playoffs and be the most penalized team in the AFL than be where they are, losing their last 4 games and miss out on the playoffs.
Sometimes
so,
crazy is good.
And considering, that Sock was this was the first time he was ever a head coach, so you'll have to forgive a little bit of the coaching nuances and things like that. So you'll take the good with the bad. But I think as far as a coaching debut, they made the playoffs. He took an expansion franchise to the playoffs, got them to be pretty good. I don't know. I mean, he might not win Coach of the Year, and I do have a tough time arguing for him over James and Tun. But, I mean, he deserves to be in that conversation, is all I'm saying.
It's easy to make the case for Stevie Tan. I mean, 17 wins, and, I mean, a lot of that, I don't know. How much of that is Coach Steve Tan? Or how much of that is the players?
I think it's absolutely a lot of Coach Steve Tan, because he took that team and he took them from 4-14 to only losing 1 game and having the best record in NFL history. And he preaches every week 1-0. He doesn't preach undefeated. He doesn't preach arenable. He preaches 1-0 every week. And I think the discipline he had in that locker room gets them that 1 week, 1 win every week. And for that reason, I think he'll win the award.
I think another thing that he's really good at is utilizing different skill levels on the field. He's got veterans like Dominic Goodman and Dominic Jones on the field at the same time he has Shane Austin, who brought off the bench. I think that there are many times you see the disconnect between the skill levels of these players, and the team will falter very quickly and very easily, and that will just turn into a downward spiral because it's hard to get out of a rut. But I think that he's done an excellent job at growing this team with veterans and some youngins.
It's just a shuffling of personnel. In talking with Dominic Jones, I don't know the accuracy of this, but it does sound pretty correct that over the 18 games that Cleveland has had 11 different starting lineups on defense, you know, whether that's a guy going from Jack to Mike or middle linebacker, you know, it's whether it's, you know, shuffling starters around or bringing in new guys. It seems like they've had a lot of upheaval, so to speak, on their defense, and I think a lot of that does have to turn to a guy like Stevie Tan. I mean, how do we ignore Kevin Guy?
Yeah, I was gonna jump in and say I don't know how we haven't mentioned
him. How have we not mentioned Kevin Guy? Guy won 14 straight games to start the season and is the coach of the best offensive attack in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's lost 3 of the last couple of games, but it's kind of surprising. Kevin Guy
is not dead, guys.
He's not. Yeah, I think if this was 4 weeks ago, we would definitely be talking about him, the streak that Arizona is on. I think it's interesting he's kind of died off, but he's definitely still a contender.
Ew. What did Richard Pryor say? Not dead yet.
But how does a coach of a year lose 3 of their last 4 games when they're fighting for home field advantage in the playoffs?
That's true.
Those games could come down. Like, they could be critical if they face Cleveland in the Arena Bowl. I mean, you don't want to go to Cleveland. I mean, no one wants to go to Cleveland. But you don't want to go to Cleveland to play at their stadium.
LeBron wants to go to Cleveland.
That's true.
Just Northeast Ohio.
Just Akron.
Just Northeast Ohio.
Maybe even Kevin Love wants to go to Cleveland. Apparently everybody wants to go to Cleveland.
Cleveland. Hashtag Believeland.
I see it now.
I think the knock against Arizona with some of this, too, is like not only did they lose three of the last four, but I think you could hear a lot of arguments that Arizona is probably the most talented team in the league.
Right.
And that's obviously a testament to the team that Kevin Guy has put together. But when you're talking about over a single season, like performance-wise, I mean, everybody understands that he's a great coach, but when you have the players that he has, when you have, you know, the all-world quarterback, when you have three wide receivers who could be number ones on other teams, it's kind of tough to say that guy did a better job coming off a fantastic season last year and going to the Arena Bowl than, you know, the guys in Cleveland and Pittsburgh who turned around more urban franchises. So it's kind of tough when you compare those, but I don't think anybody's arguing that he's not a fantastic
coach. When you look at this, you got to look at it in a vacuum. So, you know, in a sense, you can't look at what they've done in the past. You got to...
Right, it's a year-by-year.
It's a year-by-year thing.
Unfortunately,
I mean,
it's not a career achievement award.
Exactly. That's for the Hall of Fame.
I think another name just to throw out there who deserves some credit is Andy Olson of Spokane. I mean, he's a young coach, but he's still really showing that he's an up-and-coming coach. And just Spokane's had a ton of injuries with Eric Meyer going down with a broken collarbone. And also Adrian Tunnell, who he won the wide receiver of the year last year.
Yeah.
So just having to deal with him being injured and also bringing in Mike Washington was really – it ended up paying off for them with Tunnell going down with the injury and not playing much this season. And Mike Washington has been absolutely terrific for them. And I think he's done a good job of just sort of having to mix and match different lineups, having to get used to having different quarterbacks. So I think he deserves some credit, especially with just how young he is, that you know he may not have that coaching experience yet, but he's still done a really good job given the injuries that he's had to deal with.
Yeah. And I think a guy like Rob Keefe in Orlando shouldn't be overlooked there. Orlando's really had an up-and-down season on and off the field, and he's kept them focused and kept them, you know, winning down the stretch, winning when it counted, and they ended up winning the South Division. And I think that was a huge move. You know, Jason Bolt has showed no reason to not play him, but I think he saw something in bringing Bernard Morris in and starting Bernard Morris. And I think that is a testament to Rob Keefe's vision, and he's done a wonderful job in Orlando.
Yeah, and Boltis was leading the AFL in total offense per game before he went down with the injury, so that said a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure you said about Rob Keefe to be able to have the confidence to go with Bernard Morris instead, and obviously Bernard Morris has had a tremendous AFL career, so everyone knew he could have thrived in that situation, but it still took a lot to be able to take Boltis out, even when Boltis obviously is available to play right now, just to give Bernard Morris a chance to shine.
Quick little stat on Bernard Morris. Over the last three games, three consecutive wins, by the way, to end the season by Orlando, he's accounted for 25 touchdowns and two interceptions. So five of those were rushing, 20 of those were passing, but that is absurd.
That's quite the number.
And don't forget, his first three games with them, he threw 19 touchdowns to one interception, so... Started on fire, ending on fire.
In the development of three rookie receivers, Greg Clark, Leo Patton, and Kendall Tompkins, all
yeah,
rookies.
That's been amazing how all three of them have thrived.
Patton and Carr both went over 1,400 yards in the season, and Tompkins was, sorry, my math is rough, but it's close. He was like 938. I couldn't subtract 1,000 from 938 right there, but you get how close. You're 62 yards short of... reaching 1,000. So that's almost three 1,000-yard rookie receivers. That's
pretty impressive.
That's nothing to overlook there. Obviously, Darren Arbet in San Jose, he's always putting out good products. I don't know, maybe just because he's been around so long, but it's easy to forget him out in the Bay. But he's definitely a great candidate for it. But it seems like this is Stevie Tan's award to win, to lose. When you set a league record and wins... it's hard not to vote for that guy.
And Arbet falls victim to this, to a similar thing that I think that that Coach Guy does in Arizona. I mean, they have their team was great last year.
It's almost like we're taking it for granted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like if we're talking career achievement award, then Guy and Arbet are amazing and they're well deserving of it. But like we said, that's what the Hall of Fame is for. When we're talking Coach of the Year, you got to think that Pittsburgh and Cleveland are a little more deserving.
Okay. All right. It'll be interesting to see who wins that award, the COI, Coach of the Year, COI. All right, thank you, everybody. And just to go over the slate of games for the quarterfinals, we've got our first matchup, which is the wild card, Philadelphia Soul, traveling to Cleveland to take on the East champion Cleveland Gladiators. That game will be at 7 o'clock Eastern, and you can find that game on CBS Sports Network. And then our other game on Saturday, August 2nd, will be our national conference, our first national conference playoff game, as the wild card Spokane Shock travel to San Jose, the Bay, to take on the Pacific Division champs San Jose Sabercats. That game will be on at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, and that will be on ESPN3. And then our Sunday slate of games will be our American Conference matchup will be the Wild Card Pittsburgh Power going against the South Division champs Orlando Predators. That game can be seen at 2 o'clock Eastern. And then our final quarterfinal game will be our expansion team, Portland Thunder, the Wild Card there, going to the West Division champs, Arizona Rattlers, back-to-back Arena Bowl champions as well. That game can be seen on at 6 o'clock Eastern, and those two games can be viewed on ESPN3. A couple reminders here. Interact with other AFL diehards on the AF Nation message board on our website, and make sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our Twitter and Instagram handles are at AFL Arena Ball. And for all of you that are entered in our AF Nation pod contest, make sure to go on our Facebook page. This week's contest will be centered around the Philly-Cleveland game. And in order to win it, you're going to have to guess who's going to end the game with more receiving yards. Cleveland's Dominic Goodman, and then that's Philly's Tiger Jones. So go on our Facebook page, say who you think is going to have more receiving yards, and add the hashtag AF Nation Pod Contest. I want to thank all of my correspondents and guests on the show, Connor Volpe, Connor Gomer. This was Connor Volpe's last show, as well as Christy Rose's last show, Mikey Wansifer and Liz Wentz. Thank you. And I want to thank everyone else that has come on our show. And AF Nation, stay true. I'm Chris Hopkins, signing off.